Is now open. I'm going to open a I'm going to go straight to a work session on Senate Bill 234. We're still going to call you up, Director Koba, but we're going to we'll just do it during a work session. Work session on Senate Bill 234. Sue, would you just remind us again of the bill? And thank you, Ms. Hansen, for rounding up your director.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 234 authorizes the State Director of Agriculture and an appointee of the Director of Human Services to enter into a memorandum of understanding or other intergovernmental agreements to further collaboration between state and federal agencies and increase state input regarding biopharmaceutical crop issues and requirements of interest to the state. There's a dash one amendment that was discussed when last you met, and we've received a fiscal statement that indicates there's a minimal expenditure impact.
Director Koba, why don't you come up? I'm going to call Director Koba up because Senator Posansky had a question last time regarding what the process was between the group that put a considerable amount of work into putting together recommendations for this bill and felt as if the agency had ended up in a different place. And Director Koba was going to give some remarks regarding that. We won't take any other public testimony today, but I wanted to make sure we got that on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Katie Koba, Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I've handed out again the committee report, and the last two pages contain the conclusions from the committee's efforts. All of the conclusions are in bullet point. And I believe Senator Posansky's question was, why did we not include all of the recommendations in the conclusions in this bill? And basically, our response is the fact that in order to carry out some of these conclusions or recommendations, we already have existing statutory authority. So what we did as the committee worked through their recommendations, we reviewed each of those recommendations to see if indeed the state felt they could carry out those recommendations within existing statutory authority or not. And the two big pieces that came out where we didn't have statutory authority was the confidential business information. So that information that's submitted to the feds for a federal permit review process, we have to be able to keep confidential at the state level in order for the feds to share it with us at the state level. We can then review that information and provide our input to the feds on that permit application. And then the second piece was the authority to actually collect fees for the work that we would do in this area for any monitoring or enforcement action that we may need to take. So those were the two key pieces out of the conclusions that we felt we did not have current statutory authority to carry out. That was the reason that the bill was introduced, to give that authority to us clearly. The amendments have come to you to better clarify, if you will, the original bill. After the Department of Justice reviewed it, they had concerns and wanted to add the amendments, and we wanted to clarify again, even further, the confidential business information piece of that and what we would keep confidential and what would be available to the public. So we felt the dash ones were necessary to further clarify Senate Bill 234, and Senate Bill 234 were the pieces that we needed in order to fully carry out the committee's recommendations.
Okay, thank you for that. I do want to give the committee as much time as you need to ask some follow-up questions if you'd like. Senator Posansky.
Ms. Koba, since you've put on the record that you believe that you already have the authority under statute to take care of the other issues that were raised by the work group as to those areas, I'd like to have that. I'd like for you, if you can today, since you've probably reviewed this, give us those statutes as to exactly where you have the authority, so we can put on the record to make certain those who think that the other additional amendment is necessary will be able to trace the authority that you have to make certain that the agency does have the authority to follow through on those concerns that the work group task force actually recommended that you're not wanting to include because it would be redundant.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Prozanski, and we had submitted a memo to the committee on February 21st that outlined some of those things. I should have made copies of that and brought it as well, but I'll just run through a highlight of that memo. Before I do that, I think I would like to put on the record, I think one of the key issues that the Physicians for Social Responsibilities and others have revolve around this issue of veto authority, and they want state statutory authority that the state can veto a federal permit. The work group committee, and I think in general where most people feel the work group ended up, was that we would enter into a memorandum of understanding with the federal government and in that memorandum negotiate this veto authority, if you will. So I think there's a difference of opinion on the mechanism for getting at that, and that may be the key piece that you're referencing. But our other statutory authority includes ORS 561-510 that gives us authority to enter into contracts, agreements, memorandums of understanding with feds and others. 561-510 also includes our, 561 has our contract language. 561-510 specifically has our quarantine power authority, and in this case we can quarantine a plant, animal, or weed if it's diseased or infected or liable to spread and become detrimental to the plant or animal life of the state, or is liable to injure the health of Oregonians. 561-605 authorizes the detention, seizure, and embargo of agricultural products, so we can do that if they're compromised. ORS 570-405 allows us to establish control areas to protect horticulture, agricultural, and forest industries. ORS 616-225 provides authority for the department to dispose of adulterated, misbranded, or unsafe food or consumer commodities. So we feel with these various statutory authorities that we have that we can handle some of the concerns, I think, that have been expressed.
Thank you. Ms. Colbert, I want to follow up. And you believe that that authority that you just have given to the committee would not only protect those areas that you've mentioned, but just the environment in general?
Mr. Chair, Senator Prozanski, yes, I do.
I'm sorry, Senator, were you done?
I am.
Okay. Anything further, committee? Okay, Director, thank you very much. I'm going to close the... No, I actually, we were in a work session. I do want to say before we move to discussion that there were some difficult pieces to analyzing this piece of legislation with good arguments from the department and with, I think, was some very good analysis, some very good, well thought out ideas about public service, and from the Physicians for Social Responsibility as well, who provided this committee with much information. And the committee is not going to be adopting those amendments, but I didn't want to do that without noting the appreciation of this committee for that information that was provided. Committee, is there any discussion? Seeing none, Senator Atkinson, could I have a motion on the dash ones?
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 234.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 234. Committee, any discussions on that motion? And any objections? Oh, Senator Bates.
Just a couple comments. I do appreciate the Physicians for Social Responsibility concerns in this bill. However, I'm pretty assured that an agreement can be reached through the memorandum that would give us enough authority to protect the public health in this. This is a new technology, and anything new is always something we think twice about, but I don't think it's one that's dangerous. And I think it's one that can be controlled and managed, and I have confidence in the Department of Agriculture for doing that. And as such, I am fully in support of the dash ones in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with that, committee, are there any objections? Seeing none, the dash ones are adopted, and a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the bill as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves Senate Bill 234 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendations. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Senator Pozanski.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to put on the record I will be voting no at this point regarding the bill moving forward, where it will be passed recommendation as amended with the dash ones, reserving the right to change my vote on the floor. I do want to take in consideration the statements by Ms. Koba, and I appreciate her coming forward and putting on the record, but I'm not comfortable at this point to give an affirmative vote in the committee, and will consider what position I'll take on the floor at that time.
Very well. With that, are there any objections? Senator Pozanski noted. The motion carries, and Senator Bates, would you carry the bill?
I'll be glad to.
With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 234, and I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 949. And Sue, while you're filling us in, Senator Mona Sanderson, if you would like to come up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 949 authorizes the issuance of lottery bonds for grants to fund feasibility studies regarding the development necessary to construct cellulosic ethanol demonstration plants. It appropriates money from the Cellulosic Ethanol Demonstration Plant Project Fund to the State Department of Energy to provide grants and loans to certain entities to undertake feasibility studies. The measure would sunset set June 30th, 2010, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. It does have a subsequent referral to Finance and Revenue and then to Ways and Means.
Thank you. And committee, if you remember, we had hearings on this before, lengthy hearings on this before, with much testimony in support of the bill, but Dr. Morihara was not able to be here. I'm glad you could join us now. Senator Mona Sanderson?
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. You did already hear this and had a wealth of testimony from business people that truly feel that cellulosic ethanol is a cutting-edge technology with an energy potential three times greater than corn oil and a proven environmental record of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 85% over regularly formulated gasoline. And it is a wood product. Oregon is known for trees, and we can grow that very easily here in this state. And so I would hope that we would have this renewable technology be a part of our system. I would love to see this bill move forward onto revenue and then to Ways and Means. And with that, I would. It did come from the Oregon Science and Technology Partnership, and they have been very involved in Connect Oregon and working on economic development in the state. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Hiroshi.
Dr. Welcome, I'm sorry that you were out of town last time we did this. We missed you, but I'm glad you're here today.
I'm glad I'm here today. Thank you very much, Chair. I'd like to give you some background on the bill.
You just state your name for the record for us.
My name is Hiroshi Morihara, and I'm the chair of Oregon Science and Technology Partnership. I'd like to give you a little background on this bill. There is a strong federal mandate to produce cellulosic ethanol to replace 20% of gasoline in the nation. And this was demonstrated by President Bush's State of the Union message on January 23rd this year, stating that this will be a very important national policy. And 20% of gasoline means 30 to 40 billion gallons of ethanol to produce. And at the moment, about 5 billion gallons of ethanol is produced from corn in the Midwest. And so you are talking about 6 to 8 times more than what is produced today. And the federal target is to do so in 10 years. So you're talking about a huge opportunity for Oregon. And if we act now, I think Oregon can be the center of cellulosic ethanol in the USA. At the moment, of course, almost all of the ethanol is produced from corn, but corn, as Senator Anderson, Melissa Anderson mentioned, is not an efficient way of producing ethanol. If you take into account the energy required to produce corn, not just the processing of the corn to ethanol. On the other hand, there is a general knowledge by the business and scientific community that the ethanol from cellulose, such as trees, switchgrass, or wheat straws, is extremely efficient, twice or three times more efficient than corn in terms of energy required to produce. And Oregon is really blessed with inexpensive raw materials. If you go down to Boardman area or Kruskanine, you see acres and acres of yellow poplar trees grown, and most of that is for pulp industry, but the pulp industry is declining year by year. So there will be a great opportunity for farmers and for us to take advantage of that and utilize to produce ethanol. And another source is there's a healthy forest initiative, and in order to prevent the catastrophic forest fire, it is important that some of the trees be harvested on a regular basis, and so that can be used to produce ethanol. And also, Oregon is known for wheat production, and wheat straw is another good source of raw material. So we have plenty of raw materials to produce probably 600-700 million gallons of ethanol per year. And that's enough for 2 to 3 million cars, supply the gasoline for ethanol for 2 to 3 million cars. So we're talking about a large amount of raw material and ethanol capability in Oregon. And actually, the process is not as experimental as people think. In fact, this February, U.S. DOE awarded $385 million to six companies for commercial production of synthetic ethanol in the USA. And so that this means that the process is fairly mature. And none of the companies selected by the U.S. DOE is from Oregon, not because Oregon companies are incompetent, but because Oregon companies don't have the resources to build the demonstration facility to demonstrate to the U.S. DOE that we are ready. So it is very important that we act now and have the Oregon companies design and build this demonstration facility so that we can be in this game as quickly as possible. And once we have demonstrated that the our process is economically viable, then money is available not only from U.S. DOE, but from venture capitalists, banks, and private investors. So we need this money to jumpstart this industry. And oftentimes in the angel investing world, we call it valley of death. From the time, initially you have family money, the friends money, and do the work. And then you are successful, but to go to the commercial stage, you need large sum of money where banks are not ready to lend, or venture capitalists are not ready to lend. And that's why you have to go to the state or some of the agencies for help. And this is the stage we are facing today. So I strongly support this bill, and I'm hoping that you will pass this bill.
Thank you, Dr. Committee. Senator Brzezinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's worth noting that other sources for making ethanol, such as corn, is really becoming a high-priced commodity item now. We're actually seeing in the food arena that corn is costing more, and it's actually impacting certain cultures, such as the Mexican culture. Corn tortillas, ironically, are becoming more expensive, and so some staples for different cultures and food sources are becoming more of a higher-priced commodity, and it seems to me that anything we can do to move away from stable food sources to provide fuel sources where we have cellulose type of processes, and historically has shown us that that has actually been a means to produce fuel, is something that we should be looking at.
Seeing nothing further, thank you very much, Senator. Appreciate you being here. We've got two other folks on the list to testify in case you wanted to hang around. That would be David Mormon and Greg Miller.
Chair Vaca and members of the committee, my name is David Mormon. I'm the director of the Forest Resources Planning Program at the Oregon Department of Forestry, and just wanted to briefly express our strong support for the concept of furthering cellulosic ethanol development in Oregon, and specifically talk about the Oregon Forest Biomass Work Group, which was formed following direction from the 2005 legislature. It's co-chaired by the Departments of Forestry and Energy and comprised of representatives from industry, state agencies, federal agencies, environmental organizations, tribal representatives, non-governmental institutions, academics, and other stakeholder interests. They published their report earlier this year and specifically recommended that a commercial cellulosic ethanol demonstration facility be built in Oregon within the next 2.5 years using public and private funds. It's also recommended by the Oregon Forest Resources Institute's study on biomass energy and biofuels in Oregon's forests, as well as the Governor's Renewable Energy Action Plan. So just wanted to just reemphasize and get on the record the Department of Forestry and the Oregon Forest Biomass Work Group encourage the committee and the legislature to position Oregon as positively as possible for further cellulosic ethanol development. Thank you for the chance to comment.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Miller.
Chair Vaca and members of the committee, Greg Miller, for the record, Weyerhaeuser Public Affairs Manager. You have some written testimony in support of this bill. We really appreciate Senator Mona Anderson bringing this kind of legislation forward to help stimulate the market around cellulosic-based ethanol. I'm not going to read from my testimony. I think it's pretty straightforward. I would ask if you'd indulge me for just a moment. 5 o'clock this morning, we announced a joint venture with Chevron Corporation. It was announced in a letter of intent to jointly assess the feasibility of commercializing the production of biofuels from cellulose-based sources. This is a huge step forward for both companies, to the point where we even had the California governor remark and comment on this venture. And recognizing the fact that most people don't understand that we are too an Oregon-based company, even though our corporate shop's up in Washington. We've got 1.1 million acres in this state, and we couldn't agree more with this opportunity to encourage Oregon to position itself for this technology, leading-edge technology. I'd be happy to share with you some of the details of this joint venture. It's still in the developmental stage, but Chevron brings the expertise in the molecular biology, and we bring the expertise in managing the crops and utilizing feedstock that would go into the cellulosic ethanol. So I wanted to share that with you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, committee. Seeing nothing, thank you both very much. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 949. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 949. And this bill will be on its way to revenue. So, Senator Atkinson, if I could have a motion to move it to revenue.
Mr. Chair, let's avoid the valley of death and send Senate Bill 949 to the Committee on Revenue.
Thank you. Senator Atkinson moves 949 to the Committee on Revenue. Is there any discussion? Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, just curious to know if you would like to have that with a due pass recommendation or no recommendation.
Thank you. Due pass?
I would like to amend my previous amendment and say do pass recommendation.
Okay, so noted. Thank you, Senator Beyer. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so moved. That will close the work session on Senate Bill 949 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 576. And actually, committee, we're going to stand at ease for about 2 minutes, and then we'll be right back with you folks. Why don't you fill us in on the bill, and then we'll start testimony. I'm going to bring folks up in panels of three. We have a lot of folks to get through. If you can keep your testimony to about 2 minutes, and if folks have already said what you're planning on saying, think twice about maybe just listening to other folks talk, or just summarize very quickly when you come up. That would be helpful. Sue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 576 directs the State Department of Energy, in cooperation with the Oregon Department of Administrative Services, to require that major facility projects be planned, designed, constructed, and renovated to meet high-performance building standards for energy efficiency and environmental sustainability. Creates a high-performance building advisory committee under the Department of Energy. We have, for the record, received two letters, one from Mark Rossolo, who is in support of the bill but would like to have Green Globe standards added as an additional rating system, and from Kate Allen, who is with Enterprise Community Partners with a concern about affordable housing and makes a recommendation that a determination of the practicability standard for building affordable housing with the state resources be determined by the Oregon Housing and Community Services and not by the Department of Energy and Department of Administrative Services.
Thank you, Sue. We'll start with Tom Penney, Clark Brockman, and Dennis Wild.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I'm here on behalf of the American Institute of Architects, who I'm very proud to represent. And because I was a little timid, scared, never done this before, and I'm just a small-town girl in a big city, I brought 115 of them with me to help out. I did want to tell you really briefly that I'm about to give you a summary of the bill. The Dash 2 amendments are the ones all the architects who are here with me today will be speaking to. I have just this one panel, and everyone else has just signed up as regular public testimony. The bill summarizes, this piece summarizes 576-2. It also has a mock-up of what that bill would look like. And just to be very clear about what our intention is to make all public buildings meet the LEED Gold standard. And if they're over 10,000 square feet and have more than $4 million of state money invested in them, simple concept that lets local governments out. There's also a waiver provision that allows others buildings that the Department of Energy and the Department of Administrative Services do not think can meet those standards, lets them out as well. And it does, in fact, use as the standard, the LEED Gold standard, because it's being used by 90 different municipalities and state governments in the United States. It's the one my people know. It's the one most contractors know. It's the one most builders know. And it's the most prevalent standard in the United States and all the world. So we use it as the bar. You can only limbo with one pole. That's the pole we chose. But we do, in fact, write into the bill that any other standard that the Department of Energy thinks has the same environmental benefits as the LEED Gold standard, they can, in fact, adopt. We've excluded no one. We've simply set a ruler forward to measure by, and we've left it at that. And with that, I will let what's left of my panel
thank you.
Testify. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Tom Peen. I'm the president of the American Institute of Architects, the Oregon chapter, representing about 1,000 members, of which Cindy mentioned many are here today. Why are we proposing Senate Bill 576? We're members of a profession that became architects because we love to build things. We thought we were making the world a better place to live, and we didn't think we were destroying it in the process. Imagine our concern when we realize that buildings consume 48% of the energy of the nation's energy in their building operations and the creation of the building materials. We emit 38% of the greenhouse gases, compared with the transportation sector, about 27%. And I'm not here to brag about that, to tell you that we're worse than Detroit, but it turns out in the minds of architects that, in fact, we are a bigger problem than Detroit. And while we've led the nation, while architects in the Pacific Northwest have led the nation in sustainable design, one particular person, Ed Mazaria, who actually was on the faculty at the University of Oregon one time, started a program or a foundation called Architecture 2030, and the thing that he did for the profession was really to quantify the issue of what buildings contribute to this problem, the time frame it's going to take us to solve that problem, and what we need to do immediately. And based on his research and leadership, in 2005, the National AIA adopted as policy energy consumption goals for new buildings that would limit greenhouse gases. And the name of that program, called the 2030 Challenge, would mean that we need to be essentially 2030, meaning that buildings should be carbon neutral by the year 2030, and that we need to establish immediate energy savings on buildings, and then beginning very quickly to ramp up to get to that goal of 2030. Now, whether we get there or not, who knows, but I think, and things like Senate Bill 838, which we also testified in favor for because we're the people that use all that electrical energy that bill deals with, those are also important things for the built environment. This is a huge goal that Oregon architects really want to take leadership and responsibility in. And our goal for Senate Bill 576 is really simple. We want to do for the state of Oregon as clients what we're doing right now for other clients in the state. That's to build the nation's most energy efficient and sustainable buildings, and to, in the process, maintain Oregon's leadership as a center for environmental and sustainable design, which we are considered throughout the world as being the epicenter of that. And we just want the state to really be a part of our client mix. We're not asking you to be the guinea pigs. The standard we propose, LEED Gold, has been attained already on 23 buildings in the state of Oregon, about half of the LEED certified buildings. That includes 3 state-owned buildings and 4 owned by other jurisdictions, public jurisdictions. We're not asking you to do something we can't deliver on. Oregon has the highest per capita number of LEED certified projects in the country. There are 219 projects right now under design for based on the LEED standard, and there's 1,000 LEED certified LEED trained professionals operating in every firm in Oregon. And we're not asking you to do something that will cost significantly amount of money more. We have some data that we've submitted to you that talks about the energy or the cost of building green and the amount of money in return that you're going to receive in terms of operating cost. Also, the other benefits of environmental benefits and enhanced occupant comfort, and there's been studies written about that also. I want to conclude by saying that in Burlington, Vermont, as we speak, California, Oregon, and 9 other states are arguing in federal court for the right to impose higher fuel economy standards for cars. The headline in the Oregonian on Wednesday was, emission, as I have it right here, as a matter of fact, emission rules, too big a leap, GM says. Today in Salem, 110 architects, engineers, contractors, and building owners are presenting a very different case for the Oregon legislature. Tomorrow's headline, and I think there's an Oregonian reporter in the room, hopefully will be, architects say that they are ready to do more for the Oregon environment. Thank you. I want to just introduce our other panel members here. Clark Brockman from Sarah Architects has been a leader in the state and in the profession and sustainable design in the architecture profession. And Dennis Wild from Girding and Edlund has led this state and this nation and now recognized internationally as a leader in sustainable design in the private sector as a major developer for the state of Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Peen. Mr. Brockman? Thank you, Chairman Avakian and members of the committee. My name is Clark Brockman, and I'm an associate at Sarah Architects in Portland. I'm also on the board of directors for the Cascadia Green Building Council. Oregon design and construction industry is ready for this bill. We are here in force today to be a part of Oregon's energy and climate change solutions. Making the state's green building standard LEED Gold will help us do this. LEED is the accepted standard for green buildings in this state and in the country. To illustrate this, let me tell you a little bit about the work at our firm, Sarah Architects. We're an 88-person firm in Portland.
We currently have 16 active lead projects that represent over 75% of all of the work at our firm. Possibly even more interesting to my relevant to my testimony today is the array of publicly funded projects that are within our work. We are currently doing work at the city, county, state, and federal level, all of which are being done to at least a LEED Silver standard. Two of those buildings have a LEED Silver target and are tracking at a solid gold rating with no additional cost. One of the buildings, the new East Portland Aquatic Center, will be the first building built to Portland's green building standard, which is a LEED gold standard also. And we are about to start construction on time and on budget, and we are tracking within three points of LEED platinum, the standard above gold. LEED gold is an eminently achievable standard, and the Oregon Business Energy Tax Credit is a huge catalyst for making this happen. It has been so effective, in fact, that it is now being used as a model for a national business energy tax credit that's in analysis at the federal level right now. LEED gold will help maintain Oregon's leadership in the nation in regards to sustainability and the growing green economy. Regarding the economy, you need to know that our state's current leadership is already bringing the best and the brightest to Oregon. Our firm alone has three people who quit their jobs elsewhere in the country, moved to Oregon to work in green architecture, and they did not have jobs when they came. As this LEED gold, this LEED gold bill builds on our leadership, please know that the movement is still advancing. Our firm just received a large grant yesterday to develop a building that will create all the energy that it uses, gets all of its water from the rainfall that hits it, and will deal with all of its waste and stormwater on site. This is where green building is going. Your passing this LEED gold bill will help us get there. Lastly, I want to emphasize that green buildings give back. They will give back actually in exponential proportions. We all know that the energy savings measures that we put in these buildings will pay for themselves in the first few years. Everything else will be cost savings for the state and its residents for the rest of the life of the building, which is likely to be 60 to 100 years. But you should also know that green buildings will give back in other ways. Reduced maintenance, improved worker comfort and productivity, and improved durability. Please vote for this bill, which will be giving back to all Oregonians for decades to come. Thank you.
Mr. Wild, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here, Chairman. Panel, thank you. Girding Eagland Development is a large regional real estate development company doing business in Oregon, Washington, and California. We're headquartered in Portland. And we've grown from roughly $35 million a year in gross revenues in 1996 to $2.5 billion per year currently. We do large urban infill projects up and down the West Coast. All of our projects pursue an environmentally responsible strategy. We use the LEED certification process as a metric to measure the performance of all of our projects. We've grown to be a very successful company in large part because of our environmental ethic. We have found that it's obviously the right thing to do, but it's also very good business. What we do matters a great deal. The planet is undergoing significant climate change, and we must act in order to reverse this these processes. We have an obligation to future generations and very little time in which to ask, in which to act. Most climatologists now say we have 10 years or less. Very short time. There are a number of bills in the legislature this session to focus on Oregon's ability to maintain its leadership in clean, green, transferable technologies. This is the next great economic wave, and many business leaders think it will be the most significant since the steam engine. Oregon is clearly the best-positioned state in the nation to take advantage of it. Since 2000, all of our projects have pursued LEED certification. Currently, we have 33 projects that are either LEED certified or in the pipeline, more, I might add, than any other developer in the United States. We see LEED as a valuable metric for measuring the performance and in our attempts to deliver buildings that reduce energy consumption, have a smaller environmental footprint, and deliver the very best in human comfort and convenience. We do not see these as contradictory. In fact, we are looking to exceed LEED standards wherever possible. All of our new projects are targeting to achieve a 50% reduction in energy use. And within 5 years, we've made a public commitment that all of our projects will produce more energy than they consume and consume more waste than they produce. And we're positive that we'll be able to achieve this. We're not exactly positive how, but we know that with the incredible creative resources that we have in this state, that we'll be able to achieve those objectives. An example of what is possible is the new OHSU Center for Health and Healing, which was completed this last October in South Waterfront in Portland. That building saves over 60% of the energy that a conventional building would have consumed, and it saves 56% of the potable water that would be consumed by a conventional building. The building is the largest and most complex building ever to achieve LEED Platinum rating. There are more LEED-certified buildings in Oregon per capita than anywhere else in the nation, and this building would probably not have been possible in any other state. The resource network here is the finest anywhere, but in order to keep the high ground, we must commit to maintaining and improving our high standards. LEED Gold for all state buildings is not a significantly difficult task, and the payback, based on our own experience, is that a modest investment can usually be accounted to be recovered in less than 5 years. There are critical issues to address in solving our greatest problems in terms of energy consumption, resource depletion, and new building technologies. LEED Gold for state buildings is one small but critical piece. Thank you.
Very good. Committee, anything? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've heard some about this bill, and I guess I'd like one of you or all of you to talk to me about the differences and the point systems of LEED for preferences on Oregon building materials.
Well, one of the key points in terms of pursuing LEED certification is that you regionally source materials. There's a very strong emphasis on trying to source virtually all of the materials, or a majority of them, within 500 miles of the site of the building. So there's clearly a strong driver within LEED to pursue regionally accessible materials. And I think that alone is a strong impetus for sourcing materials from local businesses. And there are some great, wonderful examples. I think one of the best that I like to cite is in the wood products industry. We has long struggled with urea formaldehyde as a binder, as an adhesive for manufactured wood products. Columbia Forest Products and Oregon State University developed a new adhesive based on how mollusks attach to rocks underwater. Remarkable technology. It's going to transform the wood products industry in a few years. It's sourced here in Oregon, based here. You know, that kind of technology transfer, you know, can really help drive this state forward in terms of what we want this state's economy to be built around.
I guess, Mr. Chair, follow-up. The LEED system, is it require the forest products used in the buildings to be coming from Forest Stewardship Council certified sources?
Actually, it doesn't require it. It rewards it if it does. The way the LEED system works is it's voluntary. There are prerequisites in each section, but under the materials section, the team has a choice to, if they use FSC certified wood for the Forest Stewardship Council, FSC certified wood, then they will receive that point. It is 1 point of the either 67 or 69 point 69. Standard in the entire standard.
So why would, I'm not too familiar with the Forest Stewardship Council certification, but there are many certifying, sources for forest land. There's the American Tree Farm System, which I'm a member of. There's others too. But then you also get to the Sustainable Forestry Initiative. And then just in Oregon, we have probably the most strict, if not the most strict, forest practices rules in the nation, certainly in the world.
And so why would we be restricting or giving bonus points to this small group of Forest Stewardship Council certified wood and forgetting about all the other certified wood available in Oregon?
Can I address that?
Yeah, I guess I would say first that FSC certification is a third-party certification. It is not, in fact, it actually doesn't reward anyone in particular. It's a nonprofit. And it's all about the validity and the rigor attached to sourcing that wood from getting cut all the way to the building, and that's tied to a chain of custody. To the best of my knowledge, none of the other standards have the same level of rigor, and that was the reason why LEED adopted it. And it's very much in the same spirit as the LEED system, which is completely third-party certified and administrated by a nonprofit. There is no other funding tied to it. I guess I wouldn't say there are any direct winners. The whole idea is to make sure that the wood that's coming to the building is actually sustainably harvested.
What I would point out is in the projects that we have done, the FSC certification is one out of 69 points. So it's a relatively small piece of the overall pie. And we have typically found that it's not one that's easily achievable. So we've only gone after it, I think, twice, that particular point. And so it has not affected our ability to achieve a LEED Gold rating or even a LEED Platinum rating in terms of building performance. So I think, yes, it's a rigorous standard, but I would hope you wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater in terms of LEED as a very valuable metric system for measuring building performance. I think it definitely is.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you. Well, I guess, I guess when you get to a specific LEED, there are other standards available, and I know you have probably been in discussions about the Green Globes. I don't know much about either one of them, but I'm curious to know why you would choose to put in statute as one specific standard when others are available. Why would you not just say any federally recognized standard or something like that rather than to pick a winner and make it be a certain standard, especially when that certain standard would penalize most Oregon producers of wood products?
I think the reason for that is that nobody that I know, and I don't think I am aware of anyone. I'm not claiming I know everyone in the profession, but we don't have any experience. Our profession has no experience whatsoever with Green Globe and certifying buildings. We've done hundreds of buildings that are LEED certified, and I don't think it would be wise for us as a profession to come forward and recommend public policy on something that we have no experience with. And I think that there's just an overwhelming amount of experience and track record with the LEED system and with professions, the design profession, engineering profession, contractors who have used it and understand it and know what the results are. So I think that's the key
and
issue.
SB 576 has an equivalency standard built in, which would allow other metric systems, if they're deemed to be comparable, to be considered as well. So I don't think that it precludes. I think it simply takes a recognized bar, as Thomas said, that has wide spread acceptance and understanding, and it says, okay, this is where we're going to begin. And I hope that you understand this is not an end point. This is really a beginning point. I mean, we have a long way to go. LEED Gold buildings are not sustainable buildings. They're approaching a better level of performance and a smaller environmental footprint than what we have traditionally built. But we have a lot to learn and a long way to go. And I think what this bill is really about is for Oregon to maintain and establish a leadership position so that we can really claim the high ground and then move forward in an aggressive way. Because I think this ties to our whole economic opportunity that's out in front of us as a state.
One more, Mr. Chair, maybe more just a statement than a question, but, I guess, again, to put a certain brand name, for lack of a better term, into a statute rather than just say something like a, you know, a federally adopted certification program or something like that, I think is a mistake, and I think you need to look to a different route, and especially when that brand name penalizes the most environmentally friendly forest products state and products from that state in the world. I mean, so if you want to talk about sustainability, why would you not bring in the most environmentally friendly state forest products and try to encourage those products into your building rather than say, I'm going to pick a standard that, in fact, penalizes the majority of those states?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Cindy Robert again, for the record, Senator Beyer, our initial bill, Senate Bill 576, did, in fact, have the requirements that let the forest industry exactly have the points just based on being an Oregon-stewarded forest. That's all it took. All it took. That compromise was in there, sir. I found that in the state of Washington. But the state of Washington, in order to get this bill passed, made some compromises, and I started this bill with those compromises. And frankly, wasn't enough. But we started on that route. We wanted to add that point for forestry so that we could, in fact, help Oregon companies do what they need to do and to support Oregon timber.
I would also. Oh, I think we're going to have to move on, but I appreciate your comments very much. So thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you.
Ms. Roberts, let me ask you a question before I move on. The handwriting on the next six or eight people down is all the same. I'm assuming those are architects that are here today. Is that right? And I'm assuming it's your handwriting.
Architects have very specific writing. They all write the same. But I would simply ask my members who are here, please, please respect their time. Please, if you don't need to testify, if you don't have anything to add, please say anything.
All I wanted to know is that they're all architects. Thank you. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip past the rest of that list and get some of the other folks on board. Then we'll come back and finish up with you. If we have enough time. So next will be David Mormon and Betty Merrill. And while they're coming up, just so folks know, I let that panel go a little longer than the 2 minutes that I said because that was the panel that was selected by the large group of architects that are here today to provide testimony for the group. But for the other folks, if you could keep it to about 2 minutes, that would be greatly appreciated. Mr. Mormon, welcome again.
Thank you, Chair Vaki and members of the committee. I'm David Mormon, again, the Director of the Forest Resources Planning Program at the Oregon Department of Forestry. And the department supports the intent of Senate Bill 576 to promote energy efficient and environmentally sustainability in major state government facilities. We do have a specific problem with this element of the bill that's already been raised. While large state facilities may not have a significant structural wood component, the department strongly encourages careful consideration of the potential unintended policy implications of for Oregon's forest sector of strict adherence to the LEED system. LEED system, as has been pointed out, does appropriately assign credit for the use of locally grown and manufactured wood products. LEED also gives credit to rapidly renewable materials such as bamboo, wheat board, straw board, and cork over long cycle renewable materials, which by LEED definition would include wood from Oregon's forest. And as has been pointed out, it also expresses a preference for the Forest Stewardship Council. The Forest Stewardship Council is one of two internationally recognized third-party forest certification systems operating in Oregon. The other has been mentioned, the Sustainable Forestry Initiative. In the near future, the American Tree Farm System may also receive international endorsement. Currently, there are 5.2 million acres of forest land in Oregon that's been certified under the SFI and the Tree Farm System, and approximately 800,000 acres certified under the Forest Stewardship Council. That leaves about 24 million acres, or 80% of Oregon's public and private forest lands, that are not certified under any of those systems, and there's a variety of reasons for that. However, as has been pointed out, commercial forest management practices on all private and other non-federal non-timber forest lands in Oregon are regulated by the Forest Practices Act. We did conduct a study through OSU in 2001 that compared the legal requirements in Oregon with the standards of the Forest Stewardship Council and the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, and concluded in that study that compliance with the state's legal requirements allows forest lands to comply with many of these, and I would say in some cases exceed the requirements of these two dominant certification schemes. And then likewise, all public forests are managed under their plans that are developed with extensive input and public involvement. The key point of my testimony is that the Board of Forestry has established guiding principles for its role in addressing forest certification issues. And I've listed four principles in my testimony, but I just want to focus on the last one. And that is the board has established as one of its policies or principles that landowners with well-managed forests who choose not to pursue voluntary forest management certification should not be considered by the state of Oregon to be less competent or protective of forest resources than those landowners who do become certified. And so a state of Oregon preference for wood products receiving maximum credit under the current LEED system could be interpreted as discriminating against Oregon wood products that are not certified by the Forest Stewardship Council but are otherwise produced in full compliance with the Oregon Forest Practices Act and other state and federal laws. The message that the state government could be sending to the public is that wood products from outside of Oregon may be more preferable for use in state facilities than wood from inside the state, again, produced in compliance with our laws. I think the U.S. Green Building Council has an opportunity to grant fuller recognition to the Oregon wood products from well-managed forests in its LEED system. Until that happens, I think the Department of Forestry cannot endorse strict adherence to the LEED standards. To do so, again, would discriminate against Oregon forest landowners and wood products manufacturers. The department does appreciate the efforts made by the proponents of Senate Bill 576 to address this important issue. In the written testimony, I've recommended a text change to the introduced version of Senate Bill 576 that we think will clarify the state's policy preference for using Oregon wood in state facilities, and the department looks forward to working with all parties to craft sound legislation that promotes both environmental sustainability of our facilities and the use of Oregon wood wood products. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Merrill?
Hello, my name is Betty Merrill. I'm the manager of the Building Technologies Department at the Oregon Department of Energy. I'm testifying today on behalf of Michael Carrier in the Governor's Office, Chairman Vakin, and committee members. Our office supports Senate Bill 576. We note, however, that there are concerns by some that the bill, as originally proposed, may have some unintended effects on the use of wood and wood products originating within the state of Oregon. Amendments brought forth by the Oregon Department of Energy will help to address this concern. However, the testimony you've heard today from the Department of Forestry also provides important perspective on the issue. While we support the bill as amended, we encourage the committee to allow for a full evolution and discussion on the amended bill and underlying issues to foster greater understanding and support for all affected parties. Sincerely, Michael Carrier. And then I'm going to change hats and testify on behalf of the department. The agency supports Senate Bill 576, and we've been working with many stakeholders trying to come to resolution on some issues. The bill asks state agencies to walk the walk as well as talk sustainability. The bill requires public agencies to meet high-performance standards for sustainable development when constructing and renovating facilities, as well as to obtain the 20% increased energy efficiency beyond code currently required by the State Energy Efficient Design Program. These improvements in sustainability promote energy efficiency as well as standards to promote helpful buildings and reduce the use of resources. LEED is a nationally recognized and widely used program with about 650 certified buildings and about 4,900 registered buildings nationally. This includes more than 40 LEED certified and 80 LEED certified buildings in Oregon. Approximately a quarter to half of our public buildings currently under construction are being built to LEED silver or gold standards. The bill also provides authority for other programs to be determined as substantially equivalent. We've heard mentioned today of Green Globes, a standard I'm not particularly well-versed in. The research I've done has indicated that there are only 8 buildings nationally which have received certification and 45 that are registered. We don't believe this bill asks agencies to do a whole lot more than they're doing today. We believe that the LEED certification that's being requested is bumping the bar. It's making state agencies and public buildings move the bar just a little bit more. For state buildings, the Department of Administrative Services currently has a policy that buildings must self-certify to a checklist which is very similar to the LEED checklist. We know there's a concern with the certification of forest products. LEEDS awards only 1 point, and it's an optional point for certified wood. They also offer a point for regionally acquired resource. So I look forward to working with the committee and the stakeholders to come to a resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, any questions?
Statement, Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I don't believe I've heard more beautiful wordsmithing all week. At 12:30, listening to the Deputy Chief of Staff to the Governor, I knew exactly where the executive branch was on LEED standard. And now at 4:15, I have no idea. What exactly are you asking for? Are you accepting the LEED standard with the as equivalent language, Section 3, Line 10? Or are you...
Our confusion is on amendments.
Well,
right now...
Go to Dash 2. That's what's before us.
Okay.
So those are my amendments. Page 2, Section 3, Line 10. And does the executive support that line? That's the issue.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
Thank you.
Senator, go ahead.
That was my only question.
All right, thank you both very much. Appreciate you being here. Paul Cosgrove, Chris Jarmer, Christina McNitt. McNitt, did you have Bill Cluding in with this panel, too? His name was right up there with the rest.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Cosgrove, we can happily bring another chair, if that's your pleasure.
Whatever you want.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Cosgrove, representing the American Forest and Paper Association, thank you for allowing us to testify on this important bill. And there's written testimony in order to honor your commitment to short testimony and recognizing this committee is very good about reading what's submitted to it. I will keep my remarks quite brief and just summarize a couple of key points. AF&PA supports sustainable building materials. Wood is one of the premier sustainable building materials, and our concerns about the bill have to do with some of the issues that have already been discussed in relationship to questions and comments that you've already heard, and the selection of the LEED standard without contemplation of the benefits of the Green Globes as an alternative standard, and without appropriate, we believe, credit for Oregon's very sustainable forest practices, whether they are certified under one of the certification systems or whether they just are grown in compliance with Oregon's Forest Practices Act. I would just point out in the materials, I think there are others in the audience that are certainly more knowledgeable about the differences between Green Globes and LEED, but I did have some materials that have been developed by FPA that have a comparison of the two certification systems. And in particular, there are some differences, I think, in terms of cost, how the third-party certification has. One of the things that I learned in this process is Green Globes actually has an on-site certification visit where LEEDS does not. And that there's also how the different environmental criteria are applied is one of the attachments. And I would just point out that I also agree that energy conservation is a critical issue that this committee has already dealt with for many hours. And one of the interesting differences between the two certification processes is that there's far greater emphasis on energy efficiency under Green Globes than under LEEDS. But as I say, I think there are others who know the details better than I, and with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Jarmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chris Jarmer, Director of Water Policy and Forest Regulation for the Oregon Forest Industries Council. I, too, will be brief. Paul's and our combined package is in front of you. I just want to say that we represent a large number of acres in the state, and some of them are certified and some of them aren't. But to a person and to a company, we feel that the regulation that we follow under the Forest Practices Act ought to be good enough for anybody. And we strongly object to anybody saying that the other standards are better. And so that's where we really hang our hat on the one point in the LEED system that there's a preference for something that not many of our members are certified under the FSC. So I just wanted to put that on the record. Appreciate the time, and I'll call that good enough.
Let me be clear about what you're putting on the record. You're saying Green Globe, LEEDs, both, neither. Which?
Both.
Thank you. Mr. Kluding.
Thank you, Chair Balkin, committee, for the record, Bill Kluding, Carpenters Industrial Council, affiliated with the Brotherhood of Carpenters. And to the point, for the record, my members and my union are against Senate Bill 576. We've already heard how good our forests are, how good our forest practices are. But I feel our people in the mills are some of the best mill workers in this world. Chair and committee, our industry has lost thousands and thousands of jobs. I still represent thousands and thousands of workers in this state. But we've lost many more than what I still represent. We've lost a countless number of mills in all four corners of this state. And now we find with Senate Bill 576, it's like a slap in the face. Our timber products aren't good enough to be put in our state buildings. What's this going to do to the reputation of our timber forest products across this nation when we can't even use them in our own state buildings without getting demoted or penalized? In talking with my members across the United States, similar bills like 576 has been introduced in many states, school districts. And when the fiscal impacts was done, they jumped on Green Globes. I acquired this packet just two nights ago, and I've read this and studied it. I've lost a lot of sleep. It was done by the University of Minnesota. It's a study between LEEDs and Green Globes. And I won't go into detail, but after reading this, these two groups balance out except in one factor, and that's the cost. And with our budgets the way they are in this state, that's something we got to look at. Chair Balkin, committee, Oregon needs Green Globes, not LEEDs. We need to protect our workers. We need to be proud of our wood products. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
We'll go to Ms. McNitt first.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I represent the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, which is a counterpart to my colleague to the left at OFIC. I represent family forest landowners, and it may surprise you to know that this ownership class represents almost 40% of all privately held timberland in Oregon. OSWA opposes Senate Bill 576. And I've heard today in testimony that you can only limbo under one pole, and I just can't resist the opportunity to throw out a friendly challenge, because my industry limbos right now under three poles. We limbo under the Forest Stewardship Council, the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, and the American Tree Farm System, excuse me. Unfortunately, LEED only awards points for the FSC pole. And despite the fact that all of our Oregon growers have as a baseline, they have to adhere to the Forest Practices Act and maintain and manage their forests under rules for public resource protections, which we've estimated to cost landowners over $5 million a year. It's unfortunate that LEED doesn't represent or recognize our other systems. I've also heard that LEED is a system leader in the industry, and I don't have a quibble about that. They started in 1998. Green Globes was first established in 2005, and I think we have an opportunity to grow. With that, I'll observe the chair's admonition not to repeat testimony and close with final comments that Senate Bill 576 fails to recognize the dynamic nature of evolving and improving standards by discriminating against all standards other than FSC.
Thank you, Ms. McNitt. I think we better keep the record as clear as we possibly can. Did you or did you not just challenge Ms. Roberts to a limbo contest?
I'm waiting for the comments.
In this committee.
Mr. Chairman, you notice that none of the questions challenge Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if I should respond on the record, but it would clearly involve after hours and adult beverages.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you, the four of you. Appreciate your testimony. I'm sorry. Committee, did you have questions?
I'm sorry.
Hang on just a second. Senator Pozanski.
On the page that has Green Globes and lead, or lead comparison, and it has percentages out for each some of the sections.
Yes.
I understand they add up for 100% for each side, but what are they supposed to be demonstrating? I mean, it says like under lead, sustainable sites, 20%. Then on their Green Globes, it says 11.5. I'm trying to do some type of cross comparison, but it looks like the percentages are really just for each side.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pozanski, this chart was put together, I believe, by the American Forest and Paper Association, and so I didn't do it personally. But what I understand it to mean is that the emphasis of how you gain points, 36% of the points are from energy under Green Globes, 25% for energy and atmosphere under LEADs. They have different, as I understand, point totals. In other words, one adds up to, I think we've heard, 69, okay. And one adds up to several hundred. But it's the percentage of those points that are allocated to that particular factor.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you. Call up Mike Barstoli, Dick Portier, and John Fletcher, please. Please state your name for the record and jump right in.
My name is Mike Barsotti. I am a tree farmer in the Linn County area, just south of Lyons. I'm a forester, and I'm current chair of the Oregon Tree Farm System, which is a chapter of the American Tree Farm System. Our board, the Oregon Tree Farm System, is opposed to this bill as we saw it in the originally proposed. And there's a lot of the testimony already gone. I've attached the executive summary of the University of Minnesota study and comparing the two. But we're opposed for three reasons. One, it discriminates wood against over steel, concrete, bamboo, and other products. It discriminates, as we heard earlier, against other certification systems. And third, as a policy issue, it seems inappropriate for the state to create a monopoly in providing in the law one particular system. I was kind of picking up on what Senator Beyer said originally, that it seems like it would be much easier to strike wherever you see lead and say a credible, sustainable building standard, and then leave it up to Department of Energy to define and list those credible systems, because we have heard from everyone today, or several people today, that this is an evolving bit of science. It's going to evolve over time. Let the marketplace and let them compete to see who best serves the public need, rather than creating a monopoly and giving it to one system as the standard that Oregon would follow.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Dick Carter. I reside in Portland. I am a family forest landowner with land in Columbia County. My family has owned forest land in the state of Oregon for over 60 years through my wife. I won't repeat a lot of the things that you heard this morning. I agree with everything and in regards to the LEADS program, the problems that have been pointed out. I just want to point out to you, as a family forest landowner, I do not think that once the 1 point is awarded to a LEED gold or silver certificate, that anyone will truthfully believe that any of that wood came from my tree farm, simply because LEADS only recognizes FSC wood. They will not. Once that application goes through the office in New York City, I happen to have a friend, very good friend, whose son works in that office, and they would recognize that after that 1 point. Those that know the LEADS program and know the certification system through the gold or silver standards would automatically assume that wood came off of FSC land. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Fletcher. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for Oregon Housing and Community Services. And a side note, I've been our department's Green Building and Sustainability Coordinator for several years now. I'm bringing a little different perspective that hasn't been heard. It's been in my written testimony. I won't go through that specifically, but I would like to raise a few points that haven't been raised. When it comes to affordable housing, our department has encouraged our developers to follow green building and sustainability practices. We've worked for years to bring good practices to the attention of our partners. We've incorporated some of the green building practices into our requirements. All green building, however, is not immediately cost-effective. There may be long-term benefits that accrue. But when it comes to affordable housing, we have a great need. We have people in need of housing. And when extra costs are built into projects, there's often a trade-off between the number of units that can be built and just how many extra improvements can be made on a particular project. We're concerned about the original bill in that it creates a high standard, and there will be extra costs, and there will be consequently an impact on affordable housing that could be built. We're also concerned about the Dash 2s in that it references that the gold standard would apply to public bodies, which would include government entities at the state and local level. And that doesn't include our department specifically, but it would include groups like housing authorities. And with that concern, we realize that some of our projects would be impacted with the language as it currently stands. We're concerned about the trade-off for the affordable housing issue, and we would urge that we amend the language if the intent is not to impact affordable housing. And I guess I could answer questions along those lines.
Sure. I have a quick question. You work for the executive branch government?
Yes, sir.
We just had another agency say they were okay with Section 3, Line 10 of the bill. Are you not okay with the Dash 2 amendments?
As we looked at the Dash 2s, we are concerned that they will impact our partners. If they don't impact our department, as we do not own buildings, but we are concerned that it could result in additional costs for our affordable housing partners.
I'm having a hard time reading the executive. They're either on it or off it or on it or off it or on it or off.
There's independence within the branch, I would say.
I appear so. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I apologize if I can't read this last name. I'll give it a try. Alfred Strew, I believe. Architect, retired.
Some have left, so.
Stephen Kafouri. Bing Sheldon.
Mr. Sheldon, had to leave.
Well, I want to say Bing Sheldon one more time on the record. Duke. FLCAO, please. Mark Rosolo. Well, we're turning them out in groves. Okay. Paul Rainey. Come on down. Go ahead, Mr. Kafouri.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kafouri. I find this a fascinating discussion. I live in the first gold LEED certified residential building in the country, the Henry Condominiums in Portland, and my utility rates are less than $50 a month, winter, summer, depending, making a difference whether I'm heating or cooling. And I find it enormously satisfying every month when I get my gas and electric bills. And I think that state government ought to be doing the same thing. I'm here today representing Johnson Controls, Johnson Controls is one of the Fortune 100 companies in the United States. It's largely an auto parts company. The part I work for, it has to do with energy conservation. We work with state and local government agencies, helping them largely retrofit buildings to gold standards and sometimes silver standards. We've worked with this standard a lot. I want to tell you about one concept that I hope you've heard about, and that is energy savings performance contracts. An energy savings performance contract is a contract that we and several other companies perform, whereby we guarantee the cost savings over a period of time. And when we're doing retrofitting for buildings, we guarantee that the cost that will be saved from the energy savings will be completely subsumed in the cost that come from the construction will be completely subsumed in the cost of the energy savings. And what we do with new buildings is to guarantee, if we are involved in the design and construction of these buildings, that we will guarantee the energy savings just as we do for used buildings. So you hear a lot of talk today about building these buildings up at very high standards. The question we have is how long are they going to continue to maintain that level of energy efficiency? And with an energy savings performance contract, that can be guaranteed for 5, 10, 15, 25 years. It's something I think you ought to be knowledgeable about, and those folks who are interested, as you are, I'm sure, in saving government money in the long term, it's we're guaranteeing that that happens.
Duke?
For the record, Duke Shepard, Oregon AFL-CIO, Vice Chair Atkinson, Senator Beyer. I would just, Senator Beyer actually said just about everything I was coming up here to say in terms of establishing one proprietary standard and statute a little prematurely. I think LEED is of great merit, but we would like to see Green Globe explored more explicitly in the law. So, thank you.
Mr. Rainey.
Thank you, Vice Chair Atkinson. For the record, my name is Paul Rainey. I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Oregon Housing Authorities. With me today, I also have Julie Livingston, an architect from the Housing Authority of Portland. They'll be able to give some specific examples and answer specific questions. We've been told this legislation is not intended to affect affordable housing development. However, we're concerned that this legislation moving forward would impact affordable housing if certain issues aren't resolved. First, the bill affects public bodies as defined in ORS 174-109. Public housing authorities who are significant affordable housing developers could be defined under this statute as a public body. Second, while we share the goal of sustainable development, lead material and construction requirements present significant challenges in cost and availability. Third, actual LEED certification processes can be extremely extensive. We develop affordable housing on razor-thin margins and can ill afford additional costs. Finally, housing authorities need a clear understanding of what constitutes state funds. For example, we regularly utilize more than $4 million in federal tax credits administered by the state of Oregon, the low-income housing tax credits. So with me is Julie, who has practical on-the-ground experience with affordable housing development, who can share examples of the challenges we face using LEED certification standards. Thank you.
Hold on just a moment. We've just experienced something I've never seen before. Two lobbyists get up and leave before we had a chance to ask them questions. Duke and Mr. Kafouri, is there questions for either of these two members of the committee?
Senator Atkinson, I was just
that was good. That was good. Okay. Thank you. Are you Julie?
No, I'm Mark. You called me up for a second.
I was going to say, that's impressive. Mark, Julie, is there Julie? Julie, come on up. I was trying to be diplomatic. I think we'll allow Julie to go first, Mark.
Sure.
Now that we're all on a first-name basis, Julie, please.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Julie Livingston. I'm an architect in Portland, Oregon. I work as a project manager on affordable housing developments at the Housing Authority of Portland, and today I'm testifying on behalf of the Housing Authority. Recent revisions to Senate Bill 576 address many of the concerns of the affordable housing developers, but they do not fully consider or resolve some of the unintended potential impacts on our community's most financially at-risk households. The Housing Authority supports green building and strives to raise construction standards and apply sustainable building practices in all of its new developments. We, in fact, were the developer of the first green roof in Portland, Oregon at the Hamilton West Apartments, and we were the first HOPE 6 redevelopment at New Columbia to achieve LEED certification nationally. Two mixed-use buildings that we developed at New Columbia are LEED certified. And we have just applied to the LEED for Neighborhood Development pilot program for another redevelopment project that we are engaged in. But without clear exemption language, the LEED Gold requirement could have significant financial impacts on affordable housing developers. A current project that I'm working on will hopefully be certified LEED Silver. It's a mixed-use building. HAP made the decision to pursue LEED Silver after some additional money was introduced into the budget. The program had already been fixed. We were not at liberty to add housing units to the project. The impact to the construction budget between design team fees and increases to the construction costs are approximately 5%. And in affordable housing, where we run kind of razor-thin margins, that's the equivalent of 4 housing units. And had we known earlier in the development process that we had this additional money, we may have opted to build 4 additional housing units rather than spend the money on LEED. So 4 units doesn't sound very significant, but to put this in the context of the Portland housing market, HAP owns and manages 2,300 public housing units and 4,000 affordable housing units, and we build several hundred affordable and also public housing units every year. Public housing is primarily for hard-to-house households, either because of income or disability, other challenges that these households face. On average, public housing households earn about 17% of area median income. The average public housing household in 2006 earned under $10,000 a year, $9,600 a year. The waiting list is immense. The last time the waiting list for public housing opened, there were 9,800 applicants, and only 3,000 of them were selected to be on the waiting list. The waiting list closed on the 1st of March and won't reopen again for at least another 6 months. So you can see that the need in our community is immense, and it's growing because of what's happening in our housing market. Affordable housing serves families at up to 80% of area median income. But because of what's happening in the Portland housing market currently, most of the housing authorities' affordable housing units are occupied by households that earn between 45 and 50% of area median income. So you can see that we serve very needy households. And while we do support green building initiatives, we do believe that Senate Bill 576 requires clearer language to safeguard public housing authorities in the low-income households that we serve.
Thank you. Mark, thank you for letting me joke with you. You've been in my office before. I'm sorry I didn't see you stand up when I first called your name.
But that's okay.
Anyway, please proceed.
For the record, my name is Mark Rossolo. I am the Outreach Director for the Green Building Initiative. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Green Building Initiative is locally based here in Oregon. In fact, we're just off of Belmont in southeast Portland. You can see in the written testimony that I've provided kind of everything everybody has already gone over, so I won't go over it again in the interest of time. But I would like to bring up just a couple specific points that I've heard mentioned earlier. Number one, regarding our acceptance within the architect community and around the nation, the national AIA chapter has, in fact, recognized Green Globes. And on their website, when you look under how to build a green building, you will see Green Globes named next to LEED on that one. So we do have national acceptance on the building community. We've also been accepted by 6 states nationwide as far as legislation is concerned. Specifically, the Department of Health and Human Services has recognized us, the Department of Interior has recognized us, the Council of State Governments has recognized us, and the Office of Environmental Federal Executives has recognized us. So we do have a lot of folks around the nation who have recognized us. The United States Farmers Fund, Fireman's Fund, which is a leading U.S. insurer, has offered a 5% discount on premiums for buildings built to the Green Globe certification. And widely used in North America, Canada, and by BOMA Canada, widely used Green Globes product where it did originate. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Mark, any questions for the committee? Thank you. Thank you all very much. And thanks, thanks again. Joanna Brickman. I think this is the second time I've called your name today. Rick Fields and Bettina Von Hagen. Please go ahead, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Chairman Avakian and the committee, thanks for your time. My name is Joanna Brickman. I am the Director of Sustainable Design for ZGF Architects. We're headquartered in Portland. We are a national architecture, interiors, and urban design firm with multiple LEED Gold buildings, one of which is the engineering building at Portland State University, which was received its gold rating earlier this year. It is our belief that we need sustainable design legislation at the state level to establish Oregon's leadership position relative to sustainable design and to help further our position in terms of being a sustainable economy or an economy founded on services and products relative to sustainability, which is an advantage that we can use to further grow our larger economy and also as an export as a state. We also firmly believe that we need to set a single bar for performance that utilizes the highest and most common industry standard, and we feel that that standard needs to be the LEED rating system because it is the standard that's currently used by state agencies, and it is the most commonly used by the design and construction industry, so it is something that we're already familiar with, and it is the industry standard today. For example, the U.S. General Services Administration recently evaluated multiple green building rating systems, including the Green Globes, and found that LEED was the most appropriate and credible for use in their products. And just to be brief, ZGF is proud of its Oregon roots. We're very happy that we're from here, and we feel that the state's strong position on sustainable design is really important to furthering our success nationwide and internationally. And on behalf of my firm and my fellow ZGF colleagues who are here today, I urge you to pass this legislation as written.
Thank you. Mr. Fields.
For the record, my name is Rick Fields, and I'm president and co-owner of Neil Kelly Cabinets in Northwest Portland. Mr. Chairman, members, first of all, thank you for this wonderful bill. I think it's a great thing. And I hope we can rise above the little details of which bar we're going to limbo under, because there are so many other parts of LEED certification that have something to do with the residents and the people who will be in these buildings, schools, homes, what have you. Neil Kelly Cabinets represents a place in the very grassroots of this movement. Our FSC certification number is number 96, and they're up to 4,500 now. The very first LEED certified building in the state of Oregon, and for that matter, west of the Mississippi, is the Viridian Place, the Neil Kelly Showroom. In concert with other Oregon product manufacturers, Columbia Forest Products, Roseburg Forest Products, we have grown from a little tiny company on the corner of Ainsworth and Martin Luther King of 8 employees and $1.1 million in revenues to $6.1 million in revenues and 45 employees, and we're still in Portland. And we're using Oregon suppliers' materials. But we need to get beyond just the wood issue and start thinking about indoor air quality and the adhesives and glues and finishes that we have selected to make a very almost formaldehyde-free product. The national growth, we're in 27 states right now with dealerships. When we get a call from Minot, North Dakota, I can assure you that the green building movement is moving out quickly. Minot, North Dakota has been brain dead for a lot of years. They're calling us now wanting the product. I want to strongly support your initiative and hope we can work past some of the little whether we use which bar or not, because, again, it's a much, much larger measurement tool than just the wood issue. And Oregon leads the way in these wood products. In terms of sustainable, healthy, and friendly materials to begin with. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm Bettina Von Hagen. Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill.
And I represent EcoTrust, and EcoTrust is a regional conservation organization. And our mission is really to spur and support initiatives and businesses that make money, are good for the community, and are good for the landscape. And green building is a slam dunk on all three of those, and LEED is the appropriate standard for that. Secondly, I'm here because we are not the first LEED building west of the Mississippi. That was the honor of my colleague here. But we are the first LEED gold building west of the Mississippi, and we've been in operation for 6 years. So I'd like to share our experience with that, because we not only develop the building, we also live in it, and we have 6 years of experience of it. And so how have we done relative to these three goals? I mean, first of all, let me just describe briefly. It's a historic warehouse. It's in Portland's Pearl District. It has 25 tenants, including the City of Portland's Office of Sustainable Development, retail office, nonprofit, and for-profit clients. In terms of some of the LEED accomplishments, it stores stormwater on site. It successfully used FSC wood effectively and efficiently, and a number of other accomplishments that you've heard about in terms of green buildings. In terms of our experience in this building, you know, from an environmental perspective, obviously green building has significant advantages that you've heard about. From a financial perspective, we have been absolutely amazed by our ability to retain tenants, to attract new tenants and attract visitors to the building. And I probably shouldn't say this, but, you know, the City of Portland's Office of Sustainable Development is in our building, and they choose to be there and pay rent. They could be for free in a city-owned building, but they choose to be in our green building because it reflects their values and it presents a public face in terms of the features of the building that really amplify their programs. So really, from a financial perspective, we're able to command market rents, we're able to command tenant loyalty, we're able to, I never have to leave my building because everybody wants to come to it to have meetings, which is a tremendous advantage. So all of those things have worked out really well. The thing that has really surprised me about the building and my experience in it, and I love being in it, is really the public dimension of the building, which I really didn't anticipate. I mean, when we were redeveloping the building, we thought about money, we thought about the green features, we kind of thought about the public features. But here's what happens with green building. It absolutely changes the relationship between development and community, because developers aren't thinking just about the physical structure and about saving money. They're thinking about what their relationship with the community is, broadly defined, what their relationship is with the building community, what their relationship is going to be with the tenants, and what their relationship is going to be with the public, how that building interfaces, the concern about public health. These things really fundamentally change the way the conversation takes place, so that building becomes really a community project. It's no longer a private asset. It becomes a public asset. And that is a fundamental change. And the thing that I think that is really tremendous about our building in particular is that we have had thousands, literally hundreds of thousands of visitors to our building from Zimbabwe, from Peru, from China, all fascinated by a green building and what they might do in their own communities. And the transformative power of green building, not only in terms of the green building that you can do, but the effect that green building has in terms of thinking about what else can you do in your life. If a building can save energy, if a building can actually produce more energy than it consumes and consume more waste than it produces, if a building can do that, what can you do in your daily lives? So I think for you, like us, you're a long-term owner of this asset, and so it's not only about the building, it's about what impact can the building have on your citizens, on our citizens, and the way that they might lead their lives. Now, if I may,
I was just informed another committee is going to be in here at 5 o'clock, and we've got one more panel.
Okay. I wanted to just maybe at a later time, I'm also a representing forest landowner, EcoTrust. So I also wanted to speak to the issue that's been in front of this committee around LEED and FSC, because I have, I think, some additional information if that would be possible.
Very much. Is there any other questions for this panel?
Just a comment, and I appreciate your comments, the gentleman in the middle, about not sweating the little stuff. But if we don't sweat the little stuff, people like the chair make a fortune in legal fees.
One other quick comment. Joanna, very, very quick for the two members of the committee. You work for ZGF. What is the relationship of ZGF in the sharing room?
I'm not sure what you mean.
You designed it. Your firm designed the office wings in the 70s. That was a softball. Tell Ryan.
Definitely not.
Please tell Ryan Thompson I said hello.
I mean, they're to blame.
Yeah, well, we're working on that. Thank you very much. Very quickly, and we apologize for running out of delay. I need to call up another panel, so thank you. Paul Schwer, Jay Colson, and Rob Benfelt? Well, it looks like an F to me, but come on up. Thank you. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
My name is Jay Colson. I'm the president of Green Building Services, Inc. in Portland, Oregon. And thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee, for giving us the opportunity to speak today. With all of the things that have been said and been shared, I'd like to be brief and make one very strong point, which is Oregon is in a race right now for our ability to retain ownership and build a viable economy around sustainability. My organization, Green Building Services, Inc., has grown from 15 to 34 employees in the last 14 months because of the work we do around sustainable development consulting. One of the primary reasons I think we've been able to grow in that manner is because of the respect that our clients in the 16 states where we are doing business right now have for the state of Oregon. I would like to be very clear also that one of the reasons we have grown is because of the national adoption and acceptance of the LEED rating system, its ability to clarify what prior to the LEED rating system were the very muddy waters of defining what is a green building. The USGBC brought us that. Oregon has been quick to leverage that, and there are many entrepreneurs around this state, like me, that are building a business and looking for long-term viability, and in this instance, we're looking for the state to take leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you for having me, and I'll keep my comments brief as well, since I know we're running out of time. My name is Rob Bennett with the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Climate Initiative. I'm also the founder of the City of Portland's Green Building Program, and I just wanted to offer a few comments as it relates to when the City of Portland and City Council adopted our green building policy, and it's a very similar process in which you're going through. And I want to say that when we started that process back in 1999 and 2000, The LEED was a newer rating system. There weren't as many buildings on the ground, and we did a lot of rigorous economic analysis of the impacts of LEED. It wasn't so much about a wood issue and some of the details related to that. Back then, it was the number of buildings on the ground and the costs of LEED. And what we found was that what the costs were reasonable, and the city went forward. The city council adopted the policy. But I think what the most powerful thing that came from that was it really coalesced the city's commitment and the business community's commitment to green building, and it really helped trigger Portland becoming the center of the green building world. In essence, Portland has become the center of both the design and the development industry as it relates to green building. And I think the state has an opportunity with this bill to do just that at the state level, to be the stewards of what we're trying to do related to environmental performance of buildings, and that the state's buildings should reflect the issues related to wanting to be conserving more energy, making more healthy, livable spaces for employees. Senator Atkinson took us on a tour of this building today. There's a real opportunity here for the state buildings to really reinvest and to be a showcase of green building technologies that indicates Oregon's position as a leader in green building. And with that, I also wanted to make just one brief comment as it relates to Green Globes. The city looked at Green Globes as well back when we readopted our policy for LEED Gold. And what we found was there weren't many Green Globes buildings on the ground, and that was a real issue. So the issue that we looked at was the rigor of the standard, the defensibility of the standard, the open and transparent nature of the standards. And as we looked at them, LEED came out on top because there's so many more LEED buildings going on. There's 7,500 members in the USGBC family, including large Fortune 100 companies. It was clear to us at the city that it was a standard that was much more rigorous. And standards are standards. You really can't have many standards. And as an example, with ASHRAE and other energy code standards, we pick one standard per state and we go with it. And I would encourage you to move forward with this bill as the language stands.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I wanted to thank the architects for being here today. This was in many ways a typical hearing where you have very diverse opinions from a large number of people who feel very strongly on either side, and the committee eventually has to make a decision and move forward, and we will within a couple weeks be making a decision on this bill that I know is so important to you. You're well represented in this building every single day by Cindy Roberts, but it is especially helpful to the committee to have all of you here today too, so thank you for that. And with that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 576, and we are adjourned.